Mr. Ord, Ms. Peterson, Ms. Holbrook, thank you for coming today. I'd like to thank you for your interest in the inquiry and for your appearance at today's hearing. The purpose of this hearing is to assist Professor Taryn Muramantri in gathering evidence for the Climate Health WA inquiry into the impacts of climate change on health in Western Australia. My name is Dr. Sarah Joyce, I'm the Project Director for the inquiry. To my right is Dr. Rebel Bangor-Jones, the Public Health Advisor for the inquiry. I have been instructed by Professor Muramantri under Section 230 of the Public Health Act 2016 to conduct today's hearing. Please be aware that the use of mobile phones and other recording devices is not permitted in this room, and if you could please make sure that your phone is on silent or switched off. This hearing is a formal procedure convened under Section 231 of the Public Health Act 2016. While you are not being asked to give your evidence under oath or affirmation, it is important that you understand there are penalties under the Act for knowingly providing a response or information that is false or misleading. This is a public hearing and a transcript of your evidence will be made for the public record. If you wish to make a confidential statement during today's proceedings, please request that part of your evidence is taken in private. You have previously been provided with the inquiry's terms of reference and information on giving evidence to the inquiry. Before we begin, do you have any questions about today's hearing?
No, thank you, Chair.
No, Yvette. No, Jodie.
Thank you. For the transcript, could I ask each of you to state your name and the capacity in which you are here today? And could I also ask that throughout the hearing, you briefly state your name prior to speaking for the audio transcript?
So, Mr. Duncan Ward, I'm the Director General of the Department of Local Government, Sports and Cultural Industries.
Jodie Holbrook, I am the Director of Local Government Policy and Engagement at the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries.
Bette Peterson, Manager of Policy and Engagement at the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries.
Thank you. Mr. Ord, would you like to make a brief opening statement?
Thank you, Chair. Duncan Ord. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today. The terms of reference for the inquiry, I believe, is a quite significant moment for us. We are in the process of reviewing the Local Government Act. It's the first time it's been reviewed since 1995, and we are very aware that there is considerable community interest in the role of local government and the role in which local government plays in the well-being of our community. Because local government has given us significant autonomy under our Act, the role they play in planning at a local level, the delivery of emergency services, for engaging their local communities as action groups is quite significant to the agenda in which you are considering evidence. Local government also, of course, provides environmental health and other support services. So I do believe that it's very useful for us to be engaged with the inquiry now and in the future. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Firstly, I would like to thank your organisation for your submission to the inquiry. It's greatly appreciated. In it, you mentioned the State Local Government Partnership Agreement. Could you describe to me what this agreement is, how it came about, and whether it could be broadened to include climate change with potential links then to the state climate policy?
Duncan Ord, I'll make an initial statement, then I will pass to Ms. Holbrook for a further outlining of some of the activities under the Partnership Agreement. Local Government Partnership Agreement was established under a previous Labor government and lapsed under the last government, was reinstated with the election of McGowan government as a election commitment. It was to create a forum in which significant leaders, including the Premier who chairs it, senior ministers, including the Treasurer, Planning Minister, Minister for Local Government, could meet with WALGA and LG Pro to discuss matters of strategic interest between the two tiers of government. Partnership agreement is focused particularly on the fact that local government becomes respondent to a whole range of state legislation, and one of the concerns previously raised by local government was that state governments would undertake legislative change and reform without consultation or without understanding the impact it might have on delivery of local government services, and equally that local government, through its planning and engagement with the community, would like to bring ideas to the state government around matters of concern and have those have a forum for those to be debated and discussed, leading to opportunity for government to include it in their broader agenda. So in the initial period of time since the partnership's been in effect in this government, the focus has been particularly on the Reform Agenda for Local Government Act itself, and we are now moving with the potential of looking at other matters, including waste, climate change, general procurement, and potential of a new local government act for a second term of government. I'd now like to pass on to Ms. Holbrook.
Thank you. Thank you. Through the Chair, I think picking up on Ms. Rod's point, the key focus for the partnership agreement is really around that engagement and consultation process, and that it is effective and efficient. A lot of the work that we have done to this date has been building relationships. So as Mr. Ord intimated, it fell over in the last government. So there's been a lot of repairing of relationships and working out what the actual agenda is for local government. So to date, there's been 4 meetings, and as Mr. Ord said, it has focused on really on the key issues for local government, so the procurement, but it's also picking up things where state government is developing a new state climate policy, and within that we're looking at how we can connect the partnership agreement as a mechanism to developing a climate change agreement with local government. So at the moment the state climate policy has been out for consultation. The intention is that through that process we will then develop a separate agreement with local government. How that looks and where that is, what underpins that is still to be determined. One of the other things that we're doing under the partnership agreement is we've agreed that there needs to be a shared roadmap of what are the key issues going forward. So if we're taking a 5 or 10 year horizon, what do we need to pick up and how do we actually work together on that? And then if we pick up on things like the service priority review, one of the key outcomes in there is being adaptive, being citizen-centric, so we're looking at how we bring the community to the conversations as well. So it's not enough to be state and local government, it's also about how we engage with our community as well. So in order to do that well, part of the work that we're doing is a, I'm going to call it a map and gap of what's in current community strategic plans, and then that can feed up. And what it will demonstrate is where focus on climate is or where it isn't, and then we'll be able to disseminate that across government as well.
Thank you, that's very helpful. I understand that the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries administers a number of acts and regulations. Do you have any of the current planning laws, schemes or policies directly reference climate change? Or if not, are projected climate trends considered indirectly in any way?
So Duncan Ord, I'll give an initial response and again pass over to Jody for more detail. Under the Local Government Act, there is an integrated planning and reporting model which requires councils to develop 10-year strategic plans and underneath a 4-year operational plan. It also, of course, links across to the Planning Act itself, which has a whole range of policies and programs which are increasingly taking into account matters that would mitigate against the impacts of climate change, whether that's planning for impacts on coastal erosion or, of course, there's been a considerable amount of work undertaken to look at the concerns around bushfires and other strategies there. Even the urban canopy is becoming ever more important in trying to reduce urban heat concentrations and so on. So these have to be implemented partly through local planning laws and schemes. But the councils that have to prepare for the delivery of these services, they need to anticipate change over quite a long period of time to build in their responses and to bring the community along with them around the changing nature of the communities they're in. So the integrated planning reporting model picks up, and we are noticing, given this has developed in consultation or consultation with the community, increasing the community are expecting responses to climate change within their local government's planning policies and frameworks. We've also, of course, got good cooperation with WALGA as a peak body, and we have been successful in state agencies and local government seeking funding support from federal government and other sources to do more modelling around current and future impacts. But if I could pass on to Ms Holbrook for further outlining of that response.
Thank you. Jodie Holbrook. So in terms of the integrated planning and reporting, one of the things we're looking at under the review of the Local Government Act is how effective it is as a framework. The IPR was introduced in 2010-2012, and it was in response to strengthening capacity, critical gaps and guidance. And what we've found is over the last 7 years, we've been very focused on implementing that as a framework with local government, but what we need to turn our attention to is actually what's in those plans now more. So actually picking out where we can see alignment with other state strategies. So for example, and we'll talk about it further today, but the Emergency Management Act of 2005 is a very good example to put against the Hadley Planning Act. And of course, Mr. Orr talked about the reform of the Planning Act. We also have the reform of the Local Government Act, but we also have the Emergency Management Act, which when it was introduced was quite an enabling piece of legislation, but it's been very compliance focused, I would say, for the last few years. I think that's a reasonable thing to say. What we need to do is when we're looking at the integrated planning and reporting, we need to have visibility for state agencies and for local governments to see key plans that are a statutory requirement. So for example, the Public Health Act, local governments have to develop in a few years when it's introduced under local health plans. They have an opportunity in that to embed that in strategic community plans. We've got other ones, disability access and inclusion plans. We have emergency management plans. And we will have shortly, we do have waste plans as well. So what we're trying to do is, under the IPR, try and find a way, create a lens so it's a one-stop shop, so you come, you can see all these plans that are actually articulated in the one spot. The other thing I will refer to Yvette is talking more about our NDRP and also some of the other programs that the department runs more broadly. We are talking local government and of course the Local Government Act, but the department offers a lot of other services to local government but through our different business portfolios.
Yes, Yvette. Generally, Sport and Recreation in 2005 was looking at the sustainability of the actual industry going forward. So in that came up climate change because the actual, although the evidence was out there, it was actually impacting the local communities, particularly regionally back then.
Mm-hmm.
So since that time, some strategies have been put in place. It was a long time ago. It's sort of been on hold for a little bit, but there was a lot of engagement directly with the community and there was a framework brought out just so that the industry could survive. Particularly in the eastern states, there were grounds disappearing because there was no water to put on grounds, and a lot of people just saw that as a, you know, selfishly a sport and rec thing, but it wasn't. It's the fabric of the community that gets impacted, particularly in regional areas. That's where they meet, that's where they feel the impact the most. So since then, there's a lot of climate through our policy, our grants funding, particularly in our infrastructure. There is policy and guidance in all of the grants we give, and we also work with the local governments as also the sporting and recreation bodies on making infrastructure more sustainable going forward, particularly in the regional areas. They do need to find other solutions that are not necessarily readily available in the metro area. So, and we've come up with an environmental sustainability pack that also looks at all of the different elements of climate change and how, right down to the local sporting club, they can actually integrate it in and think about how they may need to change going forward, particularly with things like heat or surfaces. They've already been in this space. They're having to continuously test new ideas and new things going forward, particularly the water area. I know a lot of recycling was tested in a lot of the regional areas that wasn't permitted in Metro, but now that has changed. So a lot of the early piloting and testing would have been done previously through using sport and recreation as a lens.
Thank you. Is the environmental sustainability pack, is that considered a tool for local governments and sporting organisations to use? Does that still fit under the climate framework that you mentioned Department of Sport and Recreation previously?
Yes, it was more directed at the actual sports organisation itself. So it's using the initial climate plan. It's updated it a bit to cover a bit more, but we do need to modernise it. It is old, so we'll be looking at that as well.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Okay. You described in your written submission the Resilient Councils Program, which is funded by the Commonwealth National Resilience Disaster Resilience Program. Could you explain what this program is, why it's important, and what the objectives or outcomes that you're expecting to see from that?
Thank you. I'll refer the question to Yvette. Thank you.
Generally, we were looking for some evidence to support our decision making. It brought up through the IPR framework or Integrated Planning Reporting framework. We didn't actually know what was out there in local government. The actual study will be going out and looking at metro regional examples and seeing how far they have actually intertwined climate change into their planning, and also into what does, it might just be in their planning, but how does that go through and what are you actually doing on the ground? So it was something that we've worked with WAGA and Fire and Emergency and the National Disaster Resilience Scheme as a first pilot to tell us where are we sitting, what are we doing, and what is the current environment? Because some local governments are way ahead and some are way behind. So I think the idea is to look at modelling going forward and helping and putting programs in place to help those local governments to actually make their areas more climate resilient or adaptive to climate change as well, because a lot of them are already there, but there's others that will need to be there as well. So that's why we would like it, because it provides evidence with local government, but also back to state.
Thank you. And do you know exactly yet the methods of how that will be achieved?
The methods of the actual pilot?
Of the pilot.
I believe WAGA spoke to you this morning, but yes, there's a company that will be going out and sitting. It was used in Queensland, the model over in Queensland. They've come over and they'll be using the same one here in WA.
Okay.
And so it'll be a collection. Both the first part of that, stage one, is the collecting of data to aid, coming back, giving us a bit of state of play, and then we'll be using that as a base for further research going forward.
And sort of each individual level government receives their own, or is it a state? Do you get an overview of how local governments are doing across the state?
They will look at a basic desktop, which they look at all of the planning reporting. So they can go onto a website and find all of the planning plans on local government. So there will be a desktop, so at that higher level, but then they will be trialling and going into certain piloted areas, saying, well, this is more of a regional, this is more of a metro, and they will actually be sitting down with that local government, and apart from just using the plans, actually talking to people within that council as well, and trying to identify, A, what they do have, and A, is it having an impact, and what are the best practice models that they have going forward, and if they aren't doing so well, learning from others on how they can actually get there. So it's providing a down to a program level of what we're looking at going forward.
Fabulous, thank you. Okay. keeping with, I guess, the theme of local government, they do have specific legislative responsibilities around waste management, and you mentioned in the submission that data collection on the volumes of waste is available and reported by local governments, but data on the costs of waste services can be quite variable in quality, and therefore there's no systemic reporting of that. Do you have any advice for hospitals or health services who may want to begin collecting information around waste?
I'm Duncan Orders, Director General. We're very aware that the whole creation, management, disposal of waste is a key strategic issue for the state, and it's been widely canvassed some of the reasons behind that. We understand that local government plays a key role in this food chain, if you like, and we're mindful that health have particular waste requirements, and that there is an intersection between the requirements of health to dispose appropriately with their waste and the systems established under local government. We're at a very early stage of really getting our head around exactly what waste is being created and processed by local government, and we've been pleased that we established through the integrated planning and reporting framework a structure of transparency around reporting, which was created through the My Council website, that could be an avenue for both us receiving data, interpreting it and reporting on it, recognising that community change and activation is one of the key elements of improving outcomes, then letting people know what's happening, how their councils compare with each other around their strategies and so on, we've found effective in other areas. So we've entered into a relatively recent agreement with our sister agencies around being able to provide a reporting mechanism back on data that is provided by local government to Department of Environment on waste, with the idea that that could be extended beyond that. I will ask my colleagues to add some further comments to it. So I do believe that it would be useful to give the community a single overview of where waste is being created, whether that's through industry, through residences, through local businesses, or through government institutions, rather than have multiple ways of doing it. I'm not aware that our agency has engaged with the health department on how that might be affected and whether we could play a useful role, but I will ask Ms Holbrook if she could make further comment, or Yvette, responsible for good knowledge on this.
Looking at waste at the moment, we are working with Water and Environment Regulation and the Waste Authority to look at what data we're going to need going forward. So at the moment, we've been consulting with local government on what is actually needs to go in the plans, and also what data and what information is required, because they don't want it just to be a document that just says things. It will be a reporting document as well. So the mathematics behind that is still under compilation, really, basically. So at this early stage, but it's something that health could work very easily with us as a collaboration together to look at, because I suppose local government has a variety of different waste, but the main thing they're trying to understand is actually what's in their waste stream at the moment. They actually get the bins and tip them out and look at actually what people are disposing of. So health are looking at their waste as well. You really need to understand what's in your waste. And I know a lot of it is recycled out at the moment, but there's different costs behind how that waste is treated further. And I know a lot of it would be incinerated as well, which is another debate, whether you should be incinerating waste as well. So this is something that we will be looking at with the Waste Authority and Water Environmental Regulation, where there is actually under the waste strategy, we have an action to work together on local government planning. So we're just at the early stages of that at this point in time. But as I said, it would be, as a government, it would be well placed to work together.
Thank you. Very helpful, yes, it seems to be an area that we're all grappling with in terms of how to proceed around waste management. I just wanted to ask, I guess, where you see the role of the Department of the Government's Water and Cultural Industries going forward around climate change and health specifically, but climate change more generally as well. You did mention some ideas that you had in your submission around what your department could do going forward. I wondered if you could elaborate on those.
I'll just do a high level and then I'll throw to my, my two esteemed colleagues. Look, I think we are a really important agency for several sort of matters. One is that Western Australia has 137 local governments. The range of capacity of those is extreme, and we already know that we struggle to provide services, or the local government sector does, to all Western Australians on an equal and equitable basis. So remote communities, the outcomes of living in remote communities with limited services that we take for granted, whether that's effective waste management, essential services, municipal services, or capacity building. That's where local government, if it's going to play, and I believe it will, a really critical role in mitigating the impacts on individual families of climate change in their communities, then they need to have the capacity to be able to do that and engage with it. So we have already a sector that has variable capacity to do it. A number of our large local governments are, I believe, being very progressive and engaged and working effectively for their communities, and others have limited capacity to understand the risk, let alone to do much about it. So clearly that is an issue that a department that has responsibility for the sector has to take up and look at whether the mechanisms we have within our Act, like the Integrated Planning Reporting Model, is an appropriate mechanism for every local government, or whether it's working well for big ones, but we're expecting small local governments with limited capacity to plan for the future in a way which they have limited ability to do so. And therefore, we have to be cognizant we don't want failing communities as a result of expectations being put on local government can't be realised. The local government, however, is a wonderful mechanism to engage communities in local community action. And on many of the challenges we face, I believe we are an ideal agency to communicate complex issues that are generated by multiple state agencies. And rather than have them all hit every local government, you end up with 20 government departments trying to engage on some of these issues, that we act as a portal and a much easier conduit for these complex issues to be discussed, whether that's through partnership type agreements with big rep bodies or down to localised responses by our department engaging and acting, if you like, as both a representative of local government within state government and a conduit for information from state government to local government. Within our other service delivery areas, particularly sport and recreation, as Yvette said earlier, the drying of Western Australia has significantly impacted the ability to supply green spaces, sporting and recreation facilities. The initial response, of course, has been around efficiency and effectiveness and so on, because we all know, you know, you used to have walk past parks in the middle of winter with sprinklers going and things like that. None of that happens anymore. But water recycling and other mechanisms. But it is important. The green spaces themselves and recreation spaces provide multiple mitigations against social impact, economic impact, and also climatic impact. So We again believe we need to find where those innovations are and help to with our role in actually planning for community infrastructure, and we are a part funder of community infrastructure, help to bring those innovations into play through our own departmental approvals processes. But I think with that I'd pass on to Beth to add to that.
I suppose when a lot of the areas we cover are culture and the arts, multicultural interests, Aboriginal heritage, race and gaming and liquor, we have library services under there, and local government and sport and recreation, we have quite a close connection with the actual community. So from a state government perspective, a lot of our key stakeholders are at that community level, and so if anything is happening in the community, we generally will hear through our networks, our stakeholders or people within the community or within local government, what's actually going on out there in the community. So I suppose from where we sit within state government, we are looking at a lot of the data, a lot of the information that hasn't necessarily been shared through to state as well. So it's that conduit of data to aid decision making. We can look at a localised level. It might just be in the Pilbara or in a remote community. We have people come and speak to us about certain localities, but we can also look at the state as a whole because we have an element of community. We have offices in regional communities as well. We have people working on the ground with those people. A lot of that information hasn't necessarily been pushed up previously. We also have found, I know particularly for sport and rec, but it's the same with culture and the arts, a lot of those big complex issues are very difficult for people to digest, but if you bring it through a mechanism like art or sport, or it's a lot easier for people to understand. It's a great way of community education. We've used a lot of climate change or multicultural interests, so we've had a lot of advocacy done in those big complex issues out into the community through our facilities or through the programs, or we've had programs that we've done throughout the community, or there's been grant schemes as well that have targeted certain things as well. So back in 2007 with the climate change one, there was a whole lot of workshops held, the actual science was put out there, the information was put out there, and then people were more receptive because they could understand why it impacted them. So they could say, well, you know, we can't have our game in the middle of the day when it's too hot and all our kids are burning. So they looked at rescheduling. So you could bring it down to its very basic form. And because we have a lot of those interesting avenues within the actual department itself, we will be putting, I know through our facilities area, we'll have a lot of education programs. There's one for waste that we're looking at under the state climate policy. We'll be looking at putting that through our policy and any new facilities that are built. I know there's demonstration projects being looked at for the new museum for waste. So we have embraced that, and we will be trying to have those messages out into the community for a lot of the areas we have to direct impact with.
If I may, Jodie Holbrook, one of the things I feel that we have, and picking up, of course, of what Yvette and Duncan talked about, is the IPR. So the planning framework is very powerful in that it's a great tool for that citizen-centric approach. Local governments have to plan for their future, and by default they have to really understand their community. What I think we need to do better into the future is actually tap into the data that's there and really look at what's not there as well. That is where we need to be having the conversations around climate change, and it will bubble up. We're seeing it now, particularly in the emergency management space. So the local emergency management arrangements, LEMAs, all local governments have to have them. There's five responsibilities under the EM Act to do that. But I think the point was made by Mr. Ord about the way we are a conduit and a portal. I like to refer to it as a concierge to government. That's what we do. And because we do that, we've had opportunities to identify where there's capability that needs greater support. So we did talk a little bit, we
talked a little bit about the NDRP project, but there's another project I just wanted to table as well today, which is our peer support program. So peer support program, it was a pilot back in 2012, and it was 11 local governments from the Great Southern coming to the then Department of Local Government and Communities, saying we're really struggling with our IPR arrangements. We're small, we don't know how to do it, but we know we need to do it better. And what they've done is they've bandied together in quite a hub and spoke model, if I may. So Albany is the key with Denmark, and then they support the smaller local governments. But what they're doing, and it picks up on your question around, you know, do we think the IPR is picking up and capturing all the strategic risks? We are at an individual local government level, but we haven't been necessarily at a regional level, and I think that's where the discussion needs to be. LEMAs pick it up very well because you're talking about a district. We've provided extra funding to the Great Southern local governments, to the South West local governments, and also into the Kimberley and into the Pilbara. And what we're doing is we're saying, look, as a peer network, work out what the tools are that you need, assess what you need, and then come back to us, and how then we can change our systems and processes to enable them to have the right tools for the IPR. So by doing that, we'll identify where they need great support or where they're actually doing really well and establish they've got a community of practice and everything's happening really well. There's examples as well that we can bring. You know, City of Mandurah is a fantastic example. They've actually managed to integrate everything together. So they've pulled together their emergency management planning. They've pulled together their vulnerable communities all within their strategic community plan. So they are staggered. Not all local governments did them at the same time when it was introduced, so you have variances. So at the moment, some are doing their 10-year, you know, 2019 to 2029. Others are on different measures. One of the things we're wanting to do is greater consistency for the reporting. And as I mentioned before, there's 5 statutory plans local governments report on. We'd like some consistency around that. So hopefully with the concierge service, we'll be able to achieve that. Thank you.
Thank you. I think your comments in particular on the need to put community at the centre of all this, of all the planning activity, resonates particularly strongly given the appearance that we had earlier today with the State Emergency Management Committee and the WA Local Government Association had very similar messages to the inquiry around that. It's been a very consistent theme. Thank you. Is there any further comments that you would like to make before we close the hearing today?
No, thank you, Jodie.
No, I think it's fine. Thank you.
No. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So thank you all for your attendance at today's hearing. A transcript of this hearing will be sent to you so that you can correct minor factual errors before it is placed in the public record. Please return the transcript within 10 working days of the date of the covering letter or email, otherwise it will be deemed to be correct. While you cannot amend your evidence, if you would like to explain particular points in more detail or present further information, you can provide this as an addition to your submission to the inquiry when you return the transcript. Once again, thank you very much for your appearance.
Thank you.